DNS. Now, normally when people come up here with a bunch of slides, they, you know, have a bunch of slides. Not some kind of strange 3D animation that I can zoom around randomly. What is this? Just some early experimentation with visualization of network traffic as particles. All of those things are actually DNS servers that are responding back to me. In the process of my investigation, I don't know, scanned a couple million addresses. There are nice things about being the guy who wrote Scanrand. So anyway, let me go ahead and grab my slides here, which are actually also written over the last couple of hours. Not that I didn't have slides, just didn't have as nice slides. So, Black Ops of DNS, right here at the Black Hat Briefing 2004. Everything, every tool we're talking about here is being released today. Never been shown before, because till recently it didn't fully exist. So guess what? It wouldn't have been possible. So what do we got here? Who am I? For those of you who haven't seen me before, Dan Kaminsky. I'm a senior security consultant for Avaya's enterprise security practice. I am the author of a suite of tools that do interesting things to TCP/IP called the, and I'm always corrected on this, Paketo Kiwetsu. It's a collection, like you said. I've been a speaker here. This is now my fourth year speaking at the Black Hat Briefings. Always an absolute blast to be here. Been talking about TCP, and historically I used to talk a bit about SSH, which, oddly enough, is going to be coming back for more. I'm a protocol geek. I try to speak the languages that are on the wire. That's kind of what I've specialized in. So that's who I am. What are we talking about here? Well, we're talking about DNS, the domain name system. DNS is basically the internet's, we're kind of echoing here. Well, basically, it's basically the internet's version of 411. But it's a lot more complicated than 411 is. If you imagine for a moment that you could call and say, hey, I need the extension of Bob Jones at Cisco. Not just the number at Cisco, but say Bob Jones at Cisco. Well, then 411 would be, if 411 was like DNS, it would be able to do that. DNS is globally deployed. It solves a deceptively simple problem. Here's a small name, usually like 8 to 20 characters. Turn into an IP address. How hard could it be? Believe it or not, it gets pretty tricky when you want to be able to support a large-scale distributed architecture for updating these values. If these values aren't updated, you can't route. Just like the phone system doesn't work on Bob Jones' name, the internet doesn't work on www.yahoo.com. It runs on IP addresses. So DNS is the second oldest, what I call, uncontested protocol for what it does. I mean, Telnet's gone to SSH, Gopher and FTP have gone to HTTP. Really, no one's even trying to replace DNS at this point. It works well, and people let it do what it wants, and they don't even pay attention to it. Now, I really started paying attention to it when Blastr happened. I don't know if you guys, actually here, I know you guys are familiar with Blastr. Blastr, before it would go ahead, do a lookup on windowsupdate.com, and then prepare to flood it. And everyone was doing these scans to look for the vulnerability and to, you know, scanning their network traffic to see if these floods were happening. How about you look at your DNS server to see if anyone's looked up this one address that only the Blastr worm looked up? Here you have a single point of monitoring, and no one was doing it. So I ended up putting out a one-line Perl script that TCP dumped off a remote machine and did all the parsing locally and dumped it into a file. All these people started using it, much to my surprise. So I came to the conclusion, DNS is interesting. So what do we got? We got a toolkit called Ozzyman DNS, looking upon my packets, see mighty and despair. It's going to be released here at Black Hat. What do we have? Other thing about me, I tend to name my software creatively. We have an experimental DNS server, very flexible, very easy to modify. Instead of name D, we have nomde, as in Gare. Serves basically all the requests that you're going to see unless said otherwise. There's actually going to be a decent amount of stuff that's coming out of bind. Dwrap, SSH over DNS, very useful, about time. Paratools for uploading and downloading files over DNS, Aska and Geta. If you don't get it, ask your neighbor. And an interesting little hack just called Glance, which I'll show you later. Useful traits of DNS. The DNS system is hierarchical. What I mean by that is, in order to, you start off with a list of fixed name servers that everyone uses. You say, well, where is .com? Now, where is doxpara.com? Where is foodoxpara.com? And at each point, instead of giving you an answer of where you're actually looking for, it gets you closer. So .com tells you a name server for doxpara.com. Doxpara.com gives you a name server for alt.doxpara.com. And these name servers can be anywhere. So it's a recursive operation. You go to one thing, it takes you to the next, it takes you to the next. This can be a lot of work. So what the DNS engineers have done is they've actually created dedicated servers that do all the work of going through the name servers and spending all the traffic to find out eventually what is the IP address that you're trying to receive or what is the value you're trying to receive. Now, the reason they go ahead and centralize these operations isn't merely for CPU use or network use, it's for storage. I mean, if you have a centralized server that has all this data, it can store it. The concept of DNS is, for the most part, its data is supposed to be relatively static. So you put a time slice on it, and hey, now this value can be regotten over and over and over again without making another trip through the name servers. So three traits: hierarchical, recursive lookups, and caching. How can we abuse them? Well, the primary research areas for DNS, 99 and 2000, were filled with exploits against Bind. It was some very insecure code. Well, they actually fixed it for the most part. There are some small bugs, but at the end of the day, between the fixes in Bind and the fact that there's DJB DNS and a number of other servers, straight-up exploits on DNS are no longer the nightmare they used to be. Another area is DNS spoofing. This is where somehow you get servers to return false addresses, thus redirecting the traffic that would otherwise go to a nice place. DNS spoofing, there's some possible stuff, but it isn't really the focus of my research. Now, I'm a tunneling guy. I've been a tunneling guy since the SSH days, so I'm going to look how you put data that's interesting in DNS. Now, I'm not the first guy to put strange stuff in the domain name system. Recently, we've heard about BitTorrent seeds in DNS, BitTorrent being the large-scale file distribution system that requires just a little bit of data to show you where to start. There's the classic math server. You go to 2+2.foo.address.com, and you get an IP of 0004. 2+2=4. This violates the IRC, by the way. You're not allowed to have a plus in there. So I'm not the first guy. I'm not claiming I'm the first guy. I'm just trying my hand at something new here. So, what are the major methods of encapsulating data inside of DNS? Two major methods, one of which is to go ahead and encapsulate what's called text records. These are unformatted records that can have pretty much any textual content. And you put base64 data in there. Or you can do it in the actual name field, the address you put in a web server. These are restricted to 256 characters and have a very restricted subset. You can only have, there are 63 valid characters. Not 64, which would be convenient, but 63 valid characters you can have in a URL or in a domain name. So, fine. If you look at the RFC for base64, there's also a base32, and would you know it, Perl supports it, because it supports everything. So, I'm not the first person to play around with DNS tunneling. There's been lots and lots of private unreleased stuff out there. Especially in the botnets and malware scene. NSTX is the most popular tool. It actually encapsulates an Ethernet device for Linux only. And that's kind of inconvenient, because often when I want to go SSH over DNS, which is probably too often, I'm doing it under Windows. So I'm like, okay, how can I make this happen under Windows? Not going to do it in an EtherTap device off the top of my head. So let's start simple. Let's make something that doesn't require the kernel but still allows total remote networking. Well, a couple of years ago, I patched SSH and gave it a function called dynamic forwarding. If you can SSH to an outbound host, you can route all your network traffic through that connection. There's a protocol called SOX. When it starts a TCP session, you say, I want this connection to go here, or I want this connection to go here. Long story short, if you can establish an SSH link, you can do instant messaging, you can do web traffic, you can basically do anything you can do over TCP, and it's inside of this nice encrypted tunnel. So if I can get that to work over DNS, I can do instant messaging over DNS and web browsing over DNS, and it all happens in my nice encrypted tunnel. So it's very nice and straightforward. It just solves a whole bunch of problems. How do we do it? Well, DNS is many things. It's not TCP. TCP moves byte streams. DNS moves formatted records. TCP, well, it lets either side speak first. DNS, no. You can make a request, and then you get a response. If there's another response, tough luck. You can't just randomly reply to people and expect it to get parsed by anything. And TCP is 8-bit clean. You can send any bytes down that link. Oh, no, not DNS. Only a couple characters are valid. You know, I've heard this story before. I heard it with HTTP. Call it mini-HTTP. The semantics of DNS are basically very similar to what you have with HTTP. Everything I just said, can't have all bytes, can't speak first, all of that, it's just what HTTP tunnel has to deal with. And for a while, I was literally going to directly port HTTP tunnel to DNS. It turns out there are some slight differences. The major one being, in HTTP, you can have arbitrarily sized responses. In DNS, you can't. There's a 576-byte UDP limit for routability purposes. Now, there are some options that may increase that, but they're not globally deployed, and so I haven't implemented them yet. It's in the optimization phase. So, since DNS has similar semantics, we can pull off similar feats to HTTP tunnel and SOAP and all those other things that do evil things over HTTP. And aha, we have DROUTE, a DNS stream router. Now, different streams have different semantics. Upstream, as you don't really need that much upstream for most networking, for most types of requests that you do. You do for some. You have less available upstream, because in general, all you can do is make requests to arbitrary names. So we have our base 32 method of encoding data in names. We use that for the upstream. For the downstream, totally different sequence of queries. We have more bandwidth. We do text lookups, and we get back big batches of data, if there's any available. Now, there might not be any available. The other server might not have anything to say, in which case it returns an empty text record. Now, I don't want to just be flooding the other guy, so I implement a simple backoff. If I don't receive any data in my last lookup, wait 3 times longer until my next time, until some maximum sleep delay. This goes ahead and actually, shockingly, I know efficiency and data over DNS are not things that go in the same sentence, but it's moderately efficient. At least it's way more efficient than when I was just flooding DNS servers, whether or not there was any data for me there. So right now we're single-threaded, so only one packet can be outstanding at a given time, but this is a temporary implementation bug. Now, I think I have net. I think I'm going to try to give a demo. This may not work because it's wireless net quite far away from the host, but we're going to try it anyway because, hey, so. SSH has a function called proxy command, which says, use this instead of a straight TCP connection to establish my link. Proxy command equals DROUTE. Oh, by the way, Perl packager takes any... Yeah, that was written in Perl. NetDNS is really good. But takes all the modules, all the pain, and just compiles it into an exe, and it's free. This is fantastic. Can actually give you things that work. So, SSH DNS, alt.spare.com. Please don't mess with this server if you're out there. You know who you are. Oh, wait, hang on. I actually have to add verbosity. Come on, maybe. Kexnet set. Look at that. Now, like I said, it's not fast right now because it's single-threaded. It blocks on every packet. But it gets through. And if I had more time, I'd, you know, go ahead and get into my instant messenger and all that. But the code's getting released here, so you'll be able to do that. So, hallelujah, about freaking time we got one of those. So, SSH over DNS is so useful, I wrote it. It's not revolutionary, it's not insane, you know, all these kind of nice words. It's just something that needed to get done finally after all these years. Having it available, though, lets us do some really interesting work, though. Now we get to have some fun. And this isn't even in the slides. I talked about it in a previous talk. So, well, not really. Recursive Redux. You know how I said that you can talk to a DNS server and have it, you know, it'll go through the hierarchy and it'll resolve some values for you? There's some interesting things that you can do with this. DNS trusts the hierarchy to tell it where to go to next. You know, hey, where's alt.backsparrow.com? Oh, it's at this IP. And that IP happens to be where I have my name server running, my custom nom day. Where the DNS server can route to, you know, DNS is before firewalls, is before the death of IP's global addressability. And DNS is a very old and ancient protocol. So you can talk to a DNS server, and it'll ask you, oh, so where's the next hop I should go to? You say, oh, yeah, it's like 10.01.55. You can't route to it. You can just route to the DNS server. But the DNS route server can route back inside its network. This is a problem. So, what can you do with this? Well, first of all you can do is get DNS traffic inside of people's networks. You might say, oh, but I've got my DMZ locked down so, you know, traffic can't normally come on in. Yeah, I bet you dollars to donuts you've got port 53 open to come back in. Because everyone does. Well, if you don't have it open, don't raise your hand. If you have it open, don't raise your hand. See how many people aren't raising their hand? Works great. All right, so if there's anything custom on the inside, some malware inside your network, instead of it pulling out, saying, hey, do you have any attacks for me to do? It just sits there. And eventually, maybe eventually, a attack will come to it. It's an incoming path through firewalls that just hasn't been known yet. So obviously, you can do SSH over DNS to a machine you can't even IP route to. Past that, there's potential for attacks against an internal Active Directory. I have to, you know, this is theoretical. You know, if there's an exploit against Microsoft Active Directory that is fully contained inside the query name, then that attack will route through an external server through the network into the Active Directory. It's an obscure attack. It hasn't been proven yet, but it's just something to point out. Maybe it's not the best idea that you can do this cross-routing issue. How to? Name NomD actually implements an echo service. Nice thing about being completely dynamic, you don't actually need to pre-cache things or deal with Bind helpfully refusing to implement certain things for you. Yeah, Bind will do that. Bind will just be like, dude, you're crazy, no. Instead, I have an echo. If you actually go and do a lookup on 10.01.55 echo.alt.sparrow.com, it'll reply with a custom designed, you know, NS record for NS 10.01.55. If you go ahead and say, well, what's the address of this 10.01.55 thing? It'll say, hey, okay, I'll give you 10.01.55. Again, this is just like HTTP. HTTP, we realize, hey, we don't need to serve static HTML files. We can generate them on the fly. You do the same with DNS traffic. It's not that big of a deal. Induced recursion. This is cute. This is the next generation attack that I'm developing. These are the slides that I just put together for your viewing benefit. So lots of you are going to say, Dan, now come on. You think I'm stupid enough to have open recursion on my DNS server? No, that's not going to happen. So I did some large-scale DNS scans, and I've been doing lots of scans for a long while. And once I got recursive DNS access, got all those recursive packets coming back to me, I discovered something very interesting. A, there's some very curious people in this room. Hi, guys. When you do an NS lookup on my IP, I know. So when you're doing forensics, be aware. People can find out. The other aspect is that there's a lot of devices that automatically will go ahead and do lookups on you. No, you just pass a packet by them. They're like, hey, I don't know who this person is. Let me get it for my logs. Apache does this. SSD, HD does this, both after TCP is done. And IDSs will do it often. Here's what's interesting. So it tries to do the reverse lookup on your name, right? It comes all the way to you. And it says, hey, who is 6481-64164? You could tell them, but you don't. Instead, you tell them, go to this name server inside your network. He'll know. And by the way, his actual address is at some totally different DNS route. Now, why would I do that? Normally, you actually, when you forward a name server, you actually need to say, hey, you know, this name server is at this IP address. You need to put it in the same packet. It needs to be in the additional. If not, lots of servers will just be like, I'm not doing two queries. You need the answer. But if the name is in another route, Who are you to say where this name server is? You know, you could be lying. You could be spoofing. So there's this spoof protection that says, if I'm forwarded to a name server that's outside the domain that I'm searching, I will go ahead and I will go all the way through the hierarchy and go this other direction. I'll start from scratch. Now, this is what's useful, because now we've caused it to recurse to a completely new name. And we have control over what IP address it's going to try to resolve it against. So, arbitrary name, arbitrary IP address, there's our channel in one direction. So, we get to this guy inside the network. It can't just straight up reply, because that's going to go back to the IDS. We don't want, the IDS doesn't care about this SSH data we're trying to move. So instead, what we have it do is we have it do the same thing. It replies with, no, I don't know the name, I don't know what that name is. Why don't you talk to this original guy that you were talking to? I bet he knows. And you can call him this. And it goes ahead, it goes back and forth. You get up to the recursion depth of bind, back and forth, able to send arbitrary names between servers on a DNS server that isn't even accepting recursive traffic. Your IDS caused it. So that's my next gen attack. By the way, guys, stop doing this. don't just log the string that comes back out of reverse DNS. I feel foolish even mentioning this, but I could put anything in my DNS name for my reverse lookup. Like 127.0.0.1 was up for about 2 minutes earlier today. So you've got your logs that are either like, if I got a name back, print the name. If I didn't, print the number. Okay, I will print an arbitrary name or number, and you will put that in your logs. Moral of the story, save both. And if you're a software developer, I'm probably talking to you. More risks of open recursion. Widespread recursion, I'm kind of giving it some hell, but it actually isn't that bad a thing. DNS works, shockingly, considering the scale of it. Part of it is the fact that you can arbitrarily find new servers to go after on demand. It's relatively low bandwidth. This is part of the reason the system has survived. One of the interesting things, by the way, is we don't always know why systems work. We just see that they do. One of the reasons it works is this widespread recursion. Kind of a challenge that was brought up, I don't want to actually put up a name server. I don't want to modify my name server, but I still want to exchange data with someone. Is it possible that I could put data in someone's DNS server and it would just be there? What, with queries? DNS servers, they store queries, but they don't randomly give, hand out their cache to people. So how would you do it? Well, they're like, there must be a way. So I'm like, you're right, there is a way. It's just really, really slow. DNS servers can recurse. They can go through the hierarchy. But they don't necessarily have to. In fact, as the client, you can request that they not. Now, here's how this is useful. I go to a random server, and I say, hey, give me docsparrow.com, and it goes ahead and looks it up. I say, hey, give me docsparrow.com, but don't recurse. It has it in its cache, so it still gives it to me. Now I say, give me cnn.com, and it doesn't have it in its cache. And I said, don't recurse it. It says, I don't know, and you told me not to look it up. There's a difference there. There's a state change that happened. When I did the open recursion okay lookup against the server, it actually got some values, got some data for docsparrow.com. And it stored that. It's a externally visible state change. It's a single bit of information. The server knows where docsparrow.com is. It doesn't know where cnn.com is. That's a bit zero. We can actually use that to transmit data one bit at a time per packet. So, how do you do it? I'm totally going to demo this. It was rad. Split your message into bits. Do lookups for, have a little start bit. And do lookups against each bit. That's a one. And do those recursively. That's your sending. Receiving, all you do is you look up across the entire range. If it's got an answer, it's a one. If it's no answer, it's a zero. See how it works. I can't believe I actually have net during this talk. This is such a trip. Okay, so we're going to ask. So, ask a stupid question. No bit recurse. Oh, actually, I have to edit and do a message. Echo, hello, black hat. Let's specify a server. 4.2.2.1. Oh, did I say it all had to be on one server? Because it totally doesn't. You can put some bits over here, some bits over there. As long as the sender and the receiver are going after the same server, no problem. So, yeah, we'll do it off of one server just for paranoia reasons. Don't push my luck. and I think that's it. Oh, no. I actually need to look up some name. Data.spare.com. It just needs to be a wildcard DNS address. There's nothing special about that. You know, I don't know if that worked. Maybe I need to do a dash V. I don't think it's going to work. This is probably not going to work, but I'm going to try it anyway. Nah, net's gone. Oh, well. Trust me, it works. It's really funny, though, because the characters come like H-E-L-L-O. You get about a byte a second. But hey, you know, it can be bidirectional. Just both sides go ahead and they say, I'll use this channel, use that channel. A little bit of perspective, the raw IP address is 32 bits, so that's like 4 bytes, so it takes like 4 seconds to even exchange where you would potentially be going. This is a general purpose rule. Anything can be changed. And you can always send a bit. This is a general rule in the intelligence world. You can exchange data over web counters, over IPID counters and IP stacks. Paul Revere's lamps in the tower in history. I mean, the British are coming, came over a couple, you know, lamps in the tower at the end of the day. So single bit transit is not that big of a deal. The only thing that's kind of neat is the sender can be totally anonymous. Because the sender can spoof his IP address because DNS doesn't actually need a full session to start up. So you can have anonymous deposition of data. It gets stored in the caches for however long the wildcard entry is cached, and there you go. This is cool. Let's try to get some a little bit more data. A couple days ago, I'm reading Slashdot, right? And big story, RSS is overloading the internet. There's all these heavyweight HTTP queries. You know there's someone who did some like other protocols like HTTP heavyweight and then like dies of laughter. But yeah, apparently every hour on the hour a bunch of news readers will go ahead and they just request and request and request. It looks like a DDoS, a bunch of requests for the same file every hour on the hour. Apparently you can write an RSS reader but you can't do a RAND function for time. Okay. Well, they're interested in data only if it's new. They either check the last modified value in the HTTP header, or they see if it's been if modified since. So I'm like, okay, fine. I'll put last modified in the DNS text record. And, you know, what's the big problem? I'm like, well, if they couldn't go ahead and manage the random offset, they're going to link in a resolver library. Looking up text records is actually a gigantic pain. All that's easy is get host by name. It's easy to get A's, and it's easy to get addresses, and it's easy to get canonical names. I'm like, wait. Last modified's a time, right? Well, time has this funny thing. It's kind of represented as a 32-bit integer since 1973. You know what else is 32 bits? I'll give you a hint. DNS moves a lot of these. Oh, yeah, IP addresses. They're 32 bits. So if you go to it's actually not last modified. It's called glance. You go to www.cnn.com/glance.allduckspare.com and look it up. What you get back is, in little endian form, an IP address that corresponds to the time at which CNN was updated. Glance is an incredibly simple application. The key lines of code are basically get host by name and cast it as a time value, and you're done. So if you can do two lines of C, you can find out if a page has been updated over DNS. And guess what? This caches. In fact, there's also an optional value called expires, which says how long a proxy should store data. Okay, I know what the system date is from the date field. I know when it wants the data to go away. There's a certain amount of seconds there. I set that as the TTL value of the time. So it won't even, you know, you can actually control at the endpoints how long it'll keep this value. This is kind of a neat hack. What time is it? 34. All right. Domain cast. I'm totally going to get net up because there's a demo I have to do. Not this one, though. So you actually want to move more than a couple bits over DNS. And you're tired of me saying, hey, we can get a K here, a K there. Can we actually get some real data moves, some real speeds, some real file sizes? Yeah. Oh, not against one server, but, you know, there's like 160,000 servers on 64 dot. Maybe we can distribute the load. So check this out. Normally in DNS, you talk to your own server. It recurses. It goes ahead and finds out the official canonical value for whatever you're looking up. And that's great and that's wonderful, but that's not what we want here. No. I'm a sender. I have some CDs worth of data. I take it and I split it across lots and lots of servers. And I put individual chunks on each of these servers, so no individual server is having lots of huge data. Okay. Now I actually provide the list of what servers have which chunks to the user, maybe over the same system. And they just go out to the servers themselves and they pick it up themselves. So there is no canonical server you go to. I mean, you don't go to your own DNS server. You, as a client, go to DNS servers themselves. They have your chunks of data cached. How do the numbers work out? Well, 20K a server, that's not too much to ask. Okay, clarification. It is too much to ask. It's, you know, don't try this at home, kids. But, I mean, I'm just showing off. This is possible. Capacity, 20K a server, spreads out about 80 records. It's less than 256 bytes. You actually have only about 220 bytes of storage in a reasonably sized text record. We'll fudge that for the moment, though. 700 megabytes is what Nopix is. That's 35,000 servers required, but there's 140,000 on 64 dot. That's what you were looking at when I began my talk. All of those dots was a server. All of those dots could hold 20K of data. So, how fast can we pull the data off? Well, you know, we're not gonna get more than a couple K a second off an individual server. Bind has a great little thing where it just dies if you, not the server doesn't die, it'll just stop responding to you for a while if you hit it too many times. But you know what? If you got 35,000 bind servers, you got 35,000 queues to overfill. So 1K a second times 35,000 is a lot of speed. Now granted, you're not going to get full efficiency. DNS is terribly inefficient. We're doing base 64, yada, yada, yada. I don't care. We're not getting 1K a second. Reliability-wise, caches aren't determinate. They can drop at any time. So what? So we use a secret splitting mechanism. So we make it so you just need, you know, 50,000 out of 60,000 blocks and you can reconstruct the file. How do you go ahead and... I used to have this hugely complex system for distributing the list dynamically. You look in the data and it would tell you where the next server is, and you can look at it and it's going to be useful for something else. I know it. But it's unnecessary for this use. Just send a file that says, hey, here's a list of all the servers and where their data is. At 35,000 servers, 4 bytes a piece, you're looking at a 140K file. Now, if you still don't want to send a 140K file, okay, 140K at 20K a server is 7 servers. So you have 7 core servers, and then they direct to the other 35,000. So that's how you do that. This is fun, though. This is what I'm going to beat myself up on stage if I need to get a net here, because the demo rocks. So, what can we actually put in DNS that would be really cool? I work for Avaya. You know, we're a voice company. And if you really scream at me, I'll actually, instead of doing radio, I'll just do my home phone. But for now, we're going to do radio. I want to know, could I actually use DNS as a auditory transport? Well, yeah. There's a codec called Speaks. It does audio at 2 kilobit per second. That's not high quality, but it's 276 bytes for a second of audio. DNS is slow. It's not that slow. It can handle that. So, this turned out to be useful. No one was more surprised than me, because DNS caches. You know, one of the problems with radio stations is you've got 1,000 listeners, you've got to send out 1,000 streams. And it's not like the web servers, you know, web proxies actually support streams, because the file doesn't end. So, DNS universally caches. So we're going to notice that, hey, we can just have DNS cache it for us. Watch this. So how do we do it? Server how-to, it's just you look up a timestamp, and the time you get back is within some window, so say 20 seconds worth of value that the cache is going to be able to store this chunk of audio for. You look up latest.server.com, and what you get back is a CNAME, is a canonical name. What you want to know is, what is the present time? You know, what's the time on the server? Because I want to go to it and I want to get the latest signal from the machine. Now, I have to warn you, you know, this may be broken by resolvers with minimum TTLs and all these other kind of nasty things. And, you know, your resolvers then may go end up like caching data for too long. And that's sad, but, you know, that's their fault for caching data for minimum periods of time. When you said, no, just 20 seconds is fine. You don't need to hold it for longer. What does the client do? Client just retrieves the latest, finds out the timestamp it's supposed to be retrieving from, and then it just starts picking up samples. Now, I actually realized looking at this slide that there's a difference between my implementation that is described here and what it actually does. I actually have it implementing a ring buffer where I'm constantly updating the same values, and I'm just, after a certain offset, I just flip over to the beginning. Now, why do I do this? This is so I don't need to use my custom DNS server to store audio. I don't need to fill up bind with all these records that don't matter. I'm just continually updating the same records in bind. So right now, at this moment, I have radio in my bind server. And let's see if I can get the demo to work, and I'm going to make this happen if I have to bash it and reboot it and all sorts of fun things. Okay, we have that. We have that. Cool. Now, Aussie, get A. Hang on, I'm just seeing the B. This is a B64 text stream. Actually, mode. You know, I really should have this as a mental note. If you're ever doing this, have it as a, have your commands as a shell script that uses the dash X option, so you don't need to sit here trying to remember things off the top of your head. 4221. And that's just a public server. It's nothing special. What is it? B64, or no, it's in.spare.com. LibSpeaks. Decoder. Ah, oops. Hey, you know the pipe character is this great invention? Ta-da. And yeah, that's like cached in 4221 for a while. Or I think it's like 20 seconds. So you can have any number of people listen to it. Actually, this technique's useful. Like, we could backport this to HTTP and have, you know, a web server just host 10-second or 5-second or 1-second chunks of audio, and it would just fill in individual files inside of a squid cache. So you'd finally get squid cache and streaming audio. Your client would need to go ahead and, you know, have a gapless player and use playlists, but it'd work great. Of course, it would add a small penalty. You'd have HTTP headers and TCP sessions, possibly, but hey, it'd be caching. So what are my conclusions here? Dear God, I ended on time. Nice. So, people have been coming to me and say, Dan, you talk about like 80,000 things. I don't know what I'm supposed to come away with knowing. And I'm like, okay, that's a valid critique. So, here's what you're supposed to come away here knowing. One, guys, DNS is globally deployed. You use it as a client. You do. And you almost certainly have a couple servers throughout your organizations that use it. Two, as the rest of IP networking has become progressively more and more filtered, especially since the mid-90s, DNS's level of interconnectivity has, and for good reasons, but it has basically remained the same, and maybe even slightly increased. And in some ways, the level of interconnectivity offered by DNS vastly outstrips what you can get from IP. Beyond source routing, the fact that you can actually have DNS servers cache data, there really isn't an equivalent to that in the IP routing world like there is in DNS routing. The connectivity offered by DNS can be used to offer a range of services, from encrypted VPN-style links to a silent but quite deadly remotely addressable Trojan horse to an unexpectedly useful distributed audio system. And finally, caveats here, don't disable DNS, don't re-engineer it, don't throw up your hands and fire your DNS admin, but maybe you should start sniffing that traffic and looking for trends, and being aware of odd things that happen over DNS, because they're going to happen more, and they've been happening. So that's the story, and I'm open for questions. Let me see, if you have a question actually, why don't you come up, because there are like people who watch this stuff on video. Can this mic work? Can it? Testing? Sweet. All right, if you got a question, come up here. You did, so.
I was gonna say, where's the tool in the brief?
Where's the tool in the brief? Okay, good. Tool is on my hard drive, if you bug, crap. It'll be on my website in about an hour at max. And it'll be given over to the Black Hat people and be on their website. Very bad things will apparently happen to me if I don't give Ping the slides as soon as possible. I'm not kidding. Go ahead, come here.
What's up? Have you ever considered using the post options of Microsoft DNS Server instead of the tricks that you're doing to actually store the data?
The DNS, you know, I didn't actually talk about this. I'm going to talk into this thing, okay? Okay, so dynamic update is actually an RFC standard. It's an update message instead of a request, and it changes the interpretation of all the future fields. Like, for example, if they're, you know, delete this resource record and so on. As far as I know, Microsoft just uses normal dynamic update because I see it all the time in my normal domain traffic leaking out of my box when I'm at Starbucks. And I'm at Starbucks a bit lately. what was I going to say? The reason why I don't like dynamic updates. Oh, I'm out of time. Gotcha. Okay. The reason why dynamic updates aren't that great. They're great if you can route all the way to the server. Dynamic updates do not route by default. Like, they don't DNS route. The server will return a not auth error. So the best path for sending data out of a server is always going to be just do queries, do A record queries, because those will get out of anything. Any other questions? You don't even need to move the mic. Just like shout them out or something. Where? Oh, go ahead, man.
Thanks. You mentioned at the beginning of your talk that DNS and SMTP are two of the oldest unchanged and unchallenged protocols, and that people have been largely ignoring DNS, particularly in terms of security holes, since, you know, about 2000. With things like this, which makes people think more about what can be done in DNS, and things like the IETF is currently trying to work on a standard to do MX authentication over DNS, with tying more functionality to DNS than currently exists, don't you think, rather than your last statement where people shouldn't worry about DNS, leave it as it is, it's going to focus more and more attention on DNS, and people are going to be forced to rethink it because people are going to start attacking it more and more again because it's become interesting again?
My point is, it isn't the end of the world. There are some really big potential exploits out there. This is not one of them. I mean, it's on the scale of, it's not like tomorrow we're going to see every Apache box die. It is like, so over the next couple of weeks, there's going to be a lot of people that are doing big lookups. That's just on a different scale. It's interesting you bring up the MX record thing. One of the things about recursion desired is you can query a server to find out if anyone's been mailing someone. So if you say you've got a mail anonymizer, you're like, I wonder if this anonymizer has been speaking to this person. Well, what server are they at? Okay, I'll, you know, send a mail to this anonymous address, then I'll see if it's this mail server's DNS server has actually done the lookup. And you can find it out by testing with the recursion bit. So, just an amusing thing. Any other? Oh, and of course, you can see if SPF is enabled by looking up text records as well, non-recursively. Go ahead.
That Perl compiler, you said that compiled it into an AXE. What was that code?
Regarding the Perl compiler, it's called PP. You just like PP-O, foo.exe, foo.pl. And it's just like, oh, let me find everything this possibly needs and put it into an executable, and it'll work, you know, on Windows, works on Linux, works on everything. I mean, they're not the same executable, but it just, it packages it all. It's incredibly useful. Any other questions? Go ahead. How to prevent tunneling over DNS? Well, the big thing, it gets really tricky. Because you could say, oh, you know, we'll just disable text records, you know, SPF, forget it, we don't care. That's fine, I'll just move my data over CNAMEs. And be like, okay, well, I'll shrink the names of address fields so that they're not as big. And it's like, okay, I'll just use shorter names, and eventually I'll be short enough to fit in whatever restriction you do. At the end of the day, this is a fundamental architectural issue that bits are bits, and you can't really, you know, bits are wet, you know, water is wet, bits are bits. That being said, open recursion on your external servers, open recursion on a dual hosted machine, not good. That is, you know, don't do that. You don't necessarily implement split horizon, those types of things, because things are going to get out, whatever, but you don't need to have this really effective inside path wide open, and a lot of places do. Any other questions? What's up?
How much of this survives when you disable TCP?
Oh, I have presumed no TCP available. Although I actually should investigate that. Maybe I could do big, well, large scale transfers over AXFR. That's a good idea. Go ahead. I know all about this, actually. So here's the idea. One of the vigilante methods that's used to go after spammers is to disable their DNS server. And that way you can't send mail back to the spammer, right? Well, what they do is they seed lots and lots of servers out there with their MX record information. And then they change their authoritative mail server to like some other guy, to 4221 or whatever. So they're seeding you with their data so that when the vigilantes come after them, they come after you instead of them, and the mail can still route. That's the story. That's what's going on with that. And the solution that the send mail guys have come up with is they will refuse to send mail to a name server if it wasn't considered authoritative on that server. And slowly but surely, that's eliminating that problem. Any other requests?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What do we need a text record for DNS?
SPF. All of the new suggestions for doing mail filtering involve putting a small text string inside of the text record that describes who is allowed to censor mail from where. That being said, we have an exception where, you know, oh, you don't have text records? Fine, we'll put it in MX records and we'll sort out the data by preference.
They're also discussing getting a new record for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you're not going to get around this problem by just saying, oh, we don't allow this record type, we don't allow that record type. There's always going to be a place you can put the data. Any other questions? All right, this is a great time.